I'd like to move on to the mechanics portion of the complete picture video. In dealing with picture mechanics, I'd like to talk about not only that, but also the drill work that can be used collectively to incorporate proper mechanics for your pictures. Along with that, I'd like to talk about some of the common problems that exist with pictures and some of the drills that you can use to combat those types of issues. To start out with, I just want to give a little introduction on why we utilize the mechanical approach that we do to teaching our pitchers. The first point I want to make is that pitching is all about balance and alignment. When you work with your pitchers, you want to make sure that they're pitching in straight lines. You want to make sure that they're going in the right direction and that they're centered with everything that they're doing. Throwing a baseball is a difficult enough act the way it is, but to be exact with what it is you're doing, you need to keep yourself in alignment. To go along with that alignment, you really have to have good balance to what it is you do. We try to help our pitchers understand how they have to control themselves in their body with everything that they do, and to do that, you have to attain balance. That's the athletic thing to do. And if we do the proper athletic things, incorporating balance, we should be able to make some headway with our pitchers. Another point I'd like to make along with those illustrations are, you've seen a lot of pitchers who do not necessarily pitch with outstanding mechanics. You have that and see that all the time. I'm not here to tell you that a pitcher cannot pitch effectively with poor mechanics. They can't. But the propensity for them to have health problems later is much greater with poor mechanics than those that have good mechanics. If we're going to really try to treat our arm the way that we need to treat it, we need to take care of it as best we can. And to teach our people how to take care of their arm is got to be paramount to what it is we do as a coach. The one thing different about pitching than a lot of other athletic endeavors is that your people can hurt themselves. And that's why I'm really sensitive about going about and teaching our players what they need to do to be mechanically sound so they can not only improve their performance, but probably more importantly for them to protect their arm. So as we build into this session on pitching mechanics and drill work, we want to emphasize that point very clearly. Going back to the issue on balance and alignment, I want to create an illustration for you. Now, although I'm not a hunter, I've talked to plenty of hunters in time, and when they shoot a gun, they don't make any mistakes. They hold a lot of value on how to treat the gun, and they hold a lot of value on how to technically shoot a gun properly. I think the same thing holds true for throwing a baseball. Hunters are not going to have themselves out of alignment or improperly balanced when they shoot a gun. It doesn't even pay for them to do so. So why would we have our pitchers do the same thing? If we can help teach them balance and alignment, we're going to be much further along the way in meeting our success goals than if we did not. Some other things that I want to point out for you as we go along here is that the drills that we do illustrate here today, they must have a direct relationship to the desired results that we want. So we need to incorporate into any type of practice setting that we have the type of drills that we want to utilize that will help our pitchers improve their performance. And that performance also means that we're going to involve intensity levels and place pressure on these people to perform rather than to just have them go through the motions. So I want to emphasize that point very clearly right now. The number one priority that we have in throwing a baseball is to throw strikes. That's a given, and that's going to be the priority for us here as well. I know it's easier said than done, but that's why we're making such a strong plea to include balance and alignment into all the drill work that we utilize, and to make sure that we're going to do the drills in such a way that our people are going to be challenged to get better, and they're going to be challenged to be able to simulate what would actually go on in a true game situation. The next priority that we have in pitching mechanics is that we want to throw low strikes so that the drill work that we're going to do is going to help them move the ball down lower in the zone and be able to throw it down there lower in the zone more consistently. So that'll be a goal of ours as well as we progress through this drill development. I also want to point out that practice expectations are going to be the same as game. So however we put our people into a situation, we want them to be able to visualize that they're going to be in a tough game situation and that they understand what that feeling's like. We hope that all of the pitchers that we have in our program either have or are going to pitch in a big game situation. The only way that you can respond positively to a big game situation is to simulate that. So we use a variety of different things there to try to demonstrate what it would be like to pitch in a big game prior to them actually getting into a big game situation on the field. We want to emphasize too at this time that it's important that the work that our pitchers get done, they spend the vast majority of the time doing it out of the stretch position. A lot of times you can go to a ballpark or you can go to a practice setting, and when the kids are working on their skill development, all the time that they spend in the bullpen revolves around them pitching out of the windup. Now in reality, 80 to 90% of the time the kids are going to be pitching out of the stretch. In an ideal world, we hope that they never have to. But we have to prepare for the fact that runners are going to get on base and that we're going to have to react accordingly. I want you to pay special attention to this point. Go to a ball game and watch a kid who is warmed up in the bullpen and thrown out of the windup exclusively in the bullpen. Then watch him come into a game. You might see that through the first several innings, he really goes through their lineup and doesn't allow any base runners. But then watch him when he does get base runners on. You'll notice that he probably has problems with and struggles with a number of other hitters throughout the course of the lineup that follow the person that gets on base because he has not prepared himself to respond to pitching out of the stretch position. We want our players to spend the 80 to 90% of their time pitching out of the stretch because that's the position they're going to be pitching out of with runners on base, and quite obviously the only the vast majority of the times the opposing team is only going to score based on having runners on base. Obviously, if you're giving up home runs, then you can continue to pitch out of the windup, but that's not going to happen that often. The people that are going to give you the most problems are those people that are on first and second base, and you're going to need to learn how to hold them on and to pitch effectively out of that stretch position, and that's what we want to practice and prepare for, the things that are going to happen the vast majority of the time. As a pitcher, we want you to learn to ask yourself is, what do I need to be successful? That's a question we want our kids to ask themselves every day. If you're going to come into the ballpark or try to go out and perform and compete, you need to ask yourself that question. Far too many kids, and in this case pitchers, they come to practices every day and they go through the particular routine like they're asked to do, but do they ever ask themselves what it is that they need to do to be successful? And that's a challenge that we throw the way of our players all the time. Don't look at what you have to do to be successful just with our team, but look at what you need to do to be successful outside of our team and in our conference and in our region and at a national level. If you really want to be a competitor and to play at your highest possible potential, you're going to have to ask yourself that question. If you can't find the answers, then you have to talk with your coach. In our case, and I know in most coaches' case, they're very happy to share with the kids the different things that they need to do to get better. Now it's up to the kids to go off on their own where they have the vast majority of their time available to them and to work on their game on times other than when they would be at a particular practice. And the last point I want to make before we enter into some of the instructional drills and flaws that we are going to look to correct through our mechanics drills are, you need to be a slave to your master. And by saying that, we're calling the master good habits. You need to be a slave to good habits. One of the pet peeves I have with pitchers is that they are oftentimes very careless. They're oftentimes not understanding of what it is that they need to do to be successful. We can demonstrate it and illustrate it time and time over again. We're trying to build young men into reaching their true potential, and to do that we have to ask that tough question. We've had the greatest success with people that are willing to ask themselves that tough question and what it is that you need to be successful, but they also need to become a slave to the good habits and to the drills and to the techniques and to the mental mechanics that we have asked them to incorporate in their preparation. So with that, we will move into some of the drill work and to some of the causes for problems that we have in pitching, and we'll do some demonstrating here of what it is you can do and learn from this video to incorporate with your team or with the pitchers that you have within your program to get better. I'd like to demonstrate the approach that we take in teaching pitching to our young pitchers. What I've done is I've broken down the act of pitching into six different phases. So I'll refer to all of these things as phases. So we'll demonstrate those phases for you, and then we'll incorporate some of the body positions that we want our players to get into to maintain balance and alignment while delivering the ball to the plate. As I'm speaking here, we're going to talk about the first phase, and this phase is only during the windup, and that's the rocker phase that the players or the pitchers are going to make in delivering the ball to the plate. So as I'm speaking here, I want them to just take rocker steps back into position and to be thinking about the things as I'm telling them as they're doing it. So as we're delivering the ball into the camera there, our pitchers are going to start their windup with a rocker step back. During this rocker step, we want them to keep their head aligned with home plate. All this rocker step is going to do is help them to establish momentum to build into the other phases that we have awaiting us in delivering the ball to the plate. So as I speak here, they can do the rocker step back. Watch what these guys do when they do step back into their wind-up phase with their rocker step. Josh's style is a step almost straight back. In Phil's case, he steps a little bit off to the side. What I'd like to, what we want to encourage them is as long as Phil's head stays centered on home plate, we believe that that's going to be effective mode. His style is not going to drastically take him off of a straight line between the pitcher's mound and home plate, but it's going to be his way of establishing the momentum to get him in position to deliver the ball to the plate. Now in the second phase, this is what we call our balance stage position. So what they're going to do at this point is they're going to get up into a balance position where the leg is lifted, and we'll point out some of the integral things that you want to learn from this. As you can see from them doing that, they're all take turns holding them. What we've done here in the balance position is they want to establish balance within that stage. We don't want them rocked backwards so they're tilted back, because they're going to go out of alignment and lose balance. From this position here, you see it's relaxed. You see that his toes pointed down. He's lifting his leg with his knee. He's got slight flex to the back side. His hands are comfortable. His shoulders are rolled slightly forward. He's in a good, comfortable position to do that. As we move over to Josh, same thing we hope applies. There's a leg lift. You notice the hands in both Phil and in Josh's case don't go above the chin. We don't want to be excessive movement with the hands if we don't have to. That means we have less body movements to control. If a person takes their hands above their head, it's not like we're going to get all wound up about it, but we do want to emphasize that the more body movements and the more excessive the body movements, the tougher it is to control those movements and being prepared to deliver the ball to the plate. After they've attained that balance, we want them to get into what we call their third stage. We call this very succinctly the separation stage. So from here, you're going to notice that they're going to be floating towards home plate a little bit doing this. What we want to do is start them in their balance position, and then they learn to separate while staying on their backside, and they don't separate and they don't go forward until the hands do separate. So our players constantly have a way of observing themselves and gaining a feel for when it is they should go forward to the plate. We will talk later about one of the biggest problems pitchers have, and that's a rushing problem to get to the plate. In this case, in a side view, you're going to see from the balance position here, with my hands positioned where they're at, we don't start forward until the hands separate. So separation is waiting for the hands to get apart, and then our body can follow. We want our arm to lead ourselves forward. We don't want to get excessive drive off the back side. We want to be in a stand. We want to stand taller and do a little bit more falling towards home plate. You guys go ahead and rehash that point there. There we are in separation. Now they're getting out a little bit further ahead of themselves with what we're doing, but that's only natural once the hands separate. The thing to notice is that they're balanced and they're under control, and those are the most important points to emphasize. After you separate, this is what I call probably the most critical phase. It's what we call the fore phase, and that's getting oneself into throwing position. This is the earmark for figuring out whether or not our players are in a good mechanical position. Now by doing this, we want our players to get to the fore position, and we want them to hold. And I'll demonstrate to you what it is that we want them to do. First of all, I'm going to have them throw directly to the camera in a straight line, and they're going to actually not throw, but they're going to stop. So guys, why don't you do that and freeze in what would be your fore position, going right towards the camera. From the fore position here, you see that Phil has really landed in a good position. Starting from the ground up, you can see that his front foot is slightly closed, maybe in this case closed a little bit too much, so he's going to open that up a little bit. He's got flex in the back side, he's got slight flex in the front side to serve as a shock absorber. The flex on the back side keeps him balanced. It keeps him from overcommitting towards home plate prematurely. So he's in good position there. You notice the shoulders and the hips are lined up real well with the catcher, so he's in a great position there. A real good position. Up here, the elbows want to be as far apart as they can possibly be apart to throw the ball. That's where you really get stretch in the throwing muscles to get them activated to go through a real strong throwing motion, and he's in a good position there. His throwing hand here, he's got it faced more so towards third base, and that's the position that we want him to be in. What we'd advocate here is a little bit more tilt back towards the head so he doesn't allow that lever to get too long, because anybody that knows any exercise science knows that the further that the lever is, or the more the lever is extended and the further the stress on that lever is away from the main power source, the less efficiency that exists there. So we're going to tip it back into this area. You notice balance all the way through his body, so he's in a good position. In Josh's case here, he's put himself in good position too. He's tipped in the back side. It's a little bit difficult, but Phil will get himself prepared to face the other direction so we can get a side view of what he's going to be doing. In Josh's case, he's in a good position too, and he's ready to throw the ball, as you can see, with good balance. The position I was talking about here is now you have a side angle of what I was looking at. As you can see, although we're not at game speed, he's in a good position for starters. He's standing erect, he's balanced. As you can see, there's slightly more flex in the back side, a little flex in the front side for shock absorbency purposes. As you can see, he's that's the type of picture that you want to be able to see from your pitchers as they're delivering the ball. Moving on to step five. Five is the actual throwing process. And this is going to be kind of tiring, so I'll hold and support him here. But what he wants to do is he's going to take his chest to his front knee and get extended out here as best he can. What he does is going back to this position to throw the ball, he's going to be tucking down that side, and you can see the elbow elevate. If he just rotates this way, he's not going to get proper elbow angle, and he's not going to get the elbow elevated above his shoulder like we want it to be. In this case here, he pulls down and twists and gets that explosive turning of the chest. And here we've got the position where now he's going to be way out in front, releasing the ball. Again, the chest is over the front knee. You see, should see pivot on this back side. If you can notice here now, he should have done what we call squeeze the thighs together. There's going to be an explosive act of turning it over. Basically, what we're saying here is it's going to be what we call a release and release type of movement. Release of ball, release the backside. Now we're into our sixth phase, and that's the follow through. As you can see, he's in good alignment. He would probably, with all the forces exerted, be twisted a little bit more this way, but as you can see, he's got a flat back, his arm is finishing below his knees, he's extended the length and distance of his follow-through and the deceleration part of his throwing. The key point to keep in mind now through the follow-through is we've done, in the throwing process, we've extended way out in front of the body. We've got the knee out front, we pulled down, everything's tight here, we've got control of our front side, because if we're too active with our front side, we're going to throw ourselves out of alignment and out of balance. We really want to accelerate through that front side. When that ball is released, then the back side releases and we get into that tip over position, which is quite difficult for him to hold, and then we finish with our follow through a long distance through our shins and through our ankle area. One of the reasons why we strongly advocate that long follow-through is we have to understand that scientists have proven that the throwing arm can build up speeds of up to over 700 miles an hour. If we decrease the distance whereby our pitchers can follow through, you see that this can create problems. The analogy I often use is that if you're driving a car along 30 miles an hour and then you shove it into reverse, you're going to have some problems with the transmission. Well, the same thing holds here too. If we don't increase the distance of the deceleration phase, we're going to create complications for ourselves and we're going to ultimately have some arm problems that come about because of it. Now, there's other reasons why arm problems can exist, but that's one of the big reasons why we advocate utilizing a long follow-through to finishing off our pitches and effectively carry out our assignments. Well, we want you to be able to observe from here that you may not have from head-on position, or maybe I failed to mention, is that glove hand is tucked in to this chest area. Oftentimes, I'll tell our pitchers to take their chest towards the glove instead of ripping that glove in. And that gives them good rotational powers and gives them the type of movement we want. Again, you can see the angle of the back and how flat he is, how well he's turned over with this back side. And so we think he's in a good follow-through position and in a good position for phase six. The next portion of our complete pitcher segment involves talking about the five greatest mechanical problems that pitchers will encounter in their development as a pitcher. The first problem that I want to discuss with you is a rushing problem that a lot of pitchers have. And this is something that I commonly encounter whether I'm dealing with little league kids or college or professional ball players. When we talk about rushing, we're basically, you have to visualize a pitcher who you see get their body way out in front of themselves and their arm drags behind. I think that if you've been around baseball enough, you know what I'm talking about here. You're basically talking about a pitcher whose body gets too far out ahead of their throwing arm. A lot of this is caused by a pitcher being over enthusiastic or a little bit too exuberant about delivering the ball to the plate. Anybody knows that if somebody's been on the mound pitching, you're talking about a person that really is quite competitive and somebody that really wants to get the job done. When I talk to people about the act of pitching, people that get involved with pitching really take themselves to a higher degree when it comes to competitiveness. And it takes a very special person to get out there on the mound in the center of the field and do the things that they're doing. So you've got to be able to imagine what's going through a person's mind when they're thinking about throwing a ball to the plate. They're really investing all of their physical and mental energies into doing it, and sometimes they're not controlling it as well as they should. I hold this to be the major reason why we get rushing problems in our pitchers. They're trying too hard, they're working too hard with their body and not allowing their arm to stay sequentially locked into what the rest of their body is doing. So what we want to do through the drill works that we incorporate is to help them understand what they need to do to prevent a rushing problem and understand what rushing problems end up doing for them in the long run. The second problem that we end up having with our pitchers is that they tend to throw open their front side. As I demonstrated earlier during one of our phases, during the throwing process of phase five, Phil had a choice to make when he was going to deliver the ball. He was either going to spin open on a side-to-side level like this. He was going to spin his body, rotationally speaking, in a twisting action, or he was going to fulfill the action you need to actually throw and project a ball in an overhand fashion. And that is, you are not only spinning and rotating, but you are controlling the front side, so it's more of a pulling down action than anything else. If you observe professional pitchers, they really do a great job of this, and I really suggest that as a young pitcher that you observe this as closely as possible. On our levels and levels beneath us, kids still think that if they rotate hard enough and quick enough that they're going to accomplish what they need to. They really think that extra torque that they can supply in a side-to-side way would be effective to them. But going back to our original statements about balance and alignment, it's really going to be difficult to take one's body that's moving forward and to spin it aggressively side to side and accomplish what you want to accomplish. You really have to get the body controlled and pulling down on the front side and controlling that in a straight aligned manner rather than going from side to side. The third greatest mechanical problem that you're going to encounter is going to be what we call wrap. When we talk about a pitcher wrapping, again, we're getting into the pitcher over rotating their torso, the upper part of their body, and sometimes the lower part of their body in a position that takes them out of alignment and takes them out of balance. Visually, try to envision what I'm saying here, and later we'll watch our pitchers perform this. But what we're talking about when we talk about wrap is if you're where the catcher is positioned or where I'm positioned right now, and you can see the back of my arm right here, I'm over-rotating the top of my body. What it could also cause me to over-rotate my hips and put my legs out of alignment as well, and it could create some problems. Obviously, the more flexibility we have, the more we can do some rotating here and getting our hips and our muscles activated to be able to fire the ball forward. But the thing that we need to take into account here is if we're going to want to be working in straight lines, we want to be able to take the ball back straight towards second base, keep our shoulders perpendicular to the front edge of home plate, and be able to throw the ball from there. The fourth greatest mechanical problem that we'd like to talk about is what we call throwing overhand. In years past, you heard a lot of pitching coaches talk to their young people about throwing the ball overhand and how that's the most effective way. And in some respects, it's easy to understand why they would teach that. When we talk about staying in alignment, you would think that throwing the ball overhand would keep one in straight lines. Particularly when you watch me swing my arm like this, that looks like it's in an overhand position. But we have to understand that I'm not going to throw the ball like that. And then if I'm going to have to throw the ball overhand, I'm going to have to actually, when I have my shoulders in a perpendicular position to home plate, I'm actually going to have to tilt back to get the ball to go overhand. So if I'm going to try to project that ball at a great rate of speed, I'm going to have to arch my back. As you can see, I'm out of alignment, I'm out of balance, and this is going to put a whole lot of stress on the elbow and shoulder joints and ultimately have adverse effects on how you're going to perform and possibly jeopardize your throwing arm and make it more prone to injury. So we want to stay away from that and put people in a position to throw from an angle that's going to place less stress on the arm. You also have to understand that when you're throwing from an overhand position, your eyes also go out of alignment, and the good Lord didn't make our body to be able to perform from this position effectively by viewing things from a side angle. When we walk around this earth, we walk around with our eyes level. That's the way we best operate. When we drive a vehicle or any type of machinery, we keep level eyes. We never operate from this kind of position because the world looks a bit skewed from that type of position. What we want to advocate is trying to keep the eyes as level as we possibly can, and throwing overhand is going to complicate that. Now, I know you're thinking on the flip side, if a person throws in a submarine style, that could have an adverse effect. Yes, it does visually, but mechanically you're going to find out that it doesn't have the same type of adverse mechanical effects on the player as it would in throwing from an overhand position. All you have to do is go through a few repetitions yourself of throwing overhand to see that the arched back, being out of alignment and out of balance, having skewed eyes, looking at a peculiar angle, is going to have going to make pitching a whole lot more difficult for you than anything else. The fifth point, last point I want to make about the most common mechanical problems that you would encounter would be during the follow-through process. I talked about this a little bit in phase six, so I won't beat this point to death, but we want to lengthen the distance that from the point of release to the point of finishing that we possibly can for deceleration purposes. We want to give the arm as long of a distance to slow down as we possibly can. We don't want to go the short route and go through the hip area, which oftentimes you'll see even in major leaguers or professional pitchers. We want to increase that distance from release point to finish so you have time to decelerate the arm and get yourself into a good follow-through position. In utilizing the drill work that we're about to show you here, it gives a nice little compact package of things that players can do and to give themselves instant feedback and on what it is that they should be doing to grow and improve as a young pitcher. So some of the things that we're going to emphasize here are going to be very simple, very succinct, but things that they can measure from the get-go. They can do these things on their own if they care enough, and of course, when I come around, I'm hoping that I see a vast amount of improvement. Also understand that when we get kids at the college level or even at the high teen levels, people have established habits that are going to be hard to break. So when you go about making changes to anybody, don't expect that you snap your fingers and things are going to change and go away. You're going to have to spend a lot of time working on these drills to change a habit. I'm not going to list statistics for you, but anybody that knows anything about muscle memory knows that for somebody to change a movement that they've been executing a certain way for a long period of time, it's going to take many, many, many correct repetitions to change that into what it is that you want to do to improve yourself in any area of performance. To start out with here, I'd like to be able to talk about sequencing the drill work that we do. So what we're going to do here now is I'm going to tell Phil to take and work from a balanced position, and I'm going to tell him to work on 2 and 3 because I think he's having a problem with his separation, and I'm afraid that he's rushing forward with his delivery. So what I'm going to tell him to do is I'm going to tell him to concentrate solely on the 2 and 3 phase. Keep in mind that if you want people to work on mechanics, you have to take the ball out of their hand. We don't want them projecting a ball. Phil can have a ball in his hand and he can be going through the motions, but we don't want him projecting it because we want him concentrating completely on the mechanics and the mechanical change that he's working on or trying to solidify into making it into a good habit. So we're going to work in this case on phase 2 and 3, and he's going to just get a feel for the rhythm that he needs for delivering the to establishing good separation. Okay, so you can see there. Now he wants to do all these things smooth. So leg lift and separate. Okay, you see his first movement is down. That's another drill that we're going to do. Okay, now to speed this process up a little bit, we want him to do this and we want him to go from balance position to throwing position, or his four phase. So he's going to go from two to four and work on that separation, get good timing and rhythm so he gets into four position. He's going to be able to watch himself in the mirrors and execute these drills. So he's going to do that, he's going to check out all the points, and he's going to watch himself in the mirror, then he's going to go back and do it again. So he's going to work on two to four. Okay? Now the thing that we'll emphasize here is just do it smooth, okay? Smoother gets better faster. Okay, there, now he's smoother. Now we'll just pick up the rhythm a little bit. He's trying to feel everything now. He's not worried about whether or not he's throwing a strike. That's why we say take the ball out of his hands. We also advocate that you get a small hand towel that's probably about this long. It gives you some weight in your fingers, but it doesn't put a lot of stress on your arm, so you can actually go through a lot of throwing motions with that towel. Okay, now he's gone two through four. He can do these repetitions many, many times. He just threw 100 pitches yesterday, but he can come out and work on his mechanics today. That's why in our program, we think we can make progress every day in pitching, whereby in other programs, maybe somebody's going out doing running and getting some massage and trying to take care of his arm, but he's really doing nothing to work and improve on his mechanics like we feel we can do in our program by giving our players some special drills. The one thing too that you want to work on is in your programs you might have kids playing multiple positions. This young man can take these drills home with him. Maybe he didn't have time in a practice setting to work on these, but he can take these drills home with him and be able to work with them at home in a mirror that he has there. Maybe dad or mom learns to pick up on the mechanics and they can observe them himself. Another thing we might do is while we do these sequencing drills, we might put him into his four position now and have him work four through six or four through five. Let's do four to five right now. There he's in four, and now we're going to work on five. Maybe I've noticed that he's not exploding with his feet down here. He's not turning over. He's not exploding. He's not squeezing his thighs. He's not getting squared up with where he wants to go. He's not getting that chest out there. Maybe we notice that. So we want him to learn how to get to feel what he's doing there. Now after he's done that drill a few times, then maybe we have him do the whole works. We go four through, or let's go four through six. So now he's reducing down to the drills that we want him to do to pitch effectively and to learn how to do it mechanically correct. So now he's just working four through six. He can do that on his own. He can observe him in a mirror. He can look straight into the mirror. He can have mirrors off to the side, and he can be learning that. So that's what we do through the sequencing work of all the different phases. As you've gone through those six phases, you can devise your own drills as we go here. Another thing that we do to help with alignment is we utilize the board. What we're going to do here is we're going to accomplish two different drills. We're going to accomplish what we call our toe tap, which is utilized during the separation phase, and we're going to utilize the alignment. Now it's going to be a little difficult because he's got his cleats on, but normally he can be doing this even in his turfs. But watch what he does here. He's going to go up, he's going to touch down here and collect himself before he goes forward and separates. This toe tap drill is the absolute best drill I've ever seen to compensate for rushing problems that a person has. This holds up a pitcher long enough so he can get his hands separated and move forward under control to propel the ball towards the plate. So this is just a tremendous drill that I've picked up from some other great college coaches, and I'm very happy to share it with you. So we do a toe tap. Instead of him taking his leg and pushing it forward and having to have his hands catch up, we're going to go up and we're going to go down. Also notice this. We talked about a rhythm, or we talked about sequencing. One way to help your pitcher gain good rhythm and to get a smooth approach to pitching is to be able to get good timing and rhythm with the leg lift, leg down, and separate. So watch as I mention those words, what Phil's doing. So as a drill, he's just going hands up, legs up at the same time, hands down, legs down. See that? That's the process that you're looking for in your young pitchers to establish timing. Now that he's done that, then he's got that low riding foot going towards home plate. He's got his hands in good position, and there he goes. Now, to make sure that your pitchers are going in straight lines, we've got this 2x6 that they pitch off of. Now, some people might worry that their young pitcher is going to get hurt. I'll assure you, I've never had a young person get hurt at all, because you do it very slow so they get comfortable with it. A couple of points about alignment that I want to make that you need to observe as coaches and players, you need to get a good feel for, is this. The back leg, the back foot that goes up against the rubber, needs to be flush. What happens to pitchers from time to time, and maybe you can see it on video here, is if this is the rubber, sometimes the pitcher allows the heel to sneak away from the rubber. As you can see, if the heel sneaks away from the rubber, now I've automatically begun to send my body in a position that is more towards the right-handed batter's box. Now that puts my feet out of alignment. Although I may be going straight, I'm not going straight to my target. Now if I turn my heel and make sure that my heel is flush against the rubber, now I'm doing a much better job of keeping my body in alignment and thus providing that ability to stay in straight lines. So one of the things that happens is make sure that you observe that the heel stays on the rubber. Do not let it fly away from there, because you're going to run into immediate alignment problems if you do that. As he continues to do this, observe hands up, legs up, hands down, legs down, separation and go. Okay? And Phil's real diligent about making sure to do that. As you can see, he can actually pitch off of this board if he wants to. But since we're working on mechanical things, we don't get all caught up into that. One thing that we can do, or I advocate that you do, is we talked about one of the major problems being a wrapping problem, whereby the pitchers wrap their arms around their back. What I advocate is, if kids are alone, they go up against a wall. They put their back up against the wall, and then they simulate the pitching motion while their back is against the wall. So essentially what's going to happen is if I'm a wall right here, Phil has no ability to separate from it, okay? We know that already. But now if I hold my hand here, I'm an extension of the wall, and he knows if he hits my hand back here that he is wrapping. So what we'll do is they can use this wall drill as a drill work to do that, but then watch what we'll do even when our pitchers are throwing live. If Phil were pitching off an actual mound, I'll go with my back to Phil and I'll serve as a wall for him. So go ahead and do some of your repetitions like that, okay? Now, Phil does a good job of staying in alignment. In this case, he doesn't have a problem. But we've had some pitchers in the past who, and actually in the present, who have a real serious wrap problem. We want them to get instant feedback on every repetition that they do to correct that possible problem. So utilize the walls to help you correct the wrap drill. This is a drill I utilize for pitchers that have a problem getting their chest out over their lead leg. And as you can see by this drill, and watch Phil go through the motions, he's going to get that chest over there and gain a feel for the sensation that he needs to feel to get the good extension he needs to deliver the ball to the plate. So Phil, why don't you go ahead and do some repetitions there. And as you can see, we get good action off of that. Now, it isn't like you have to do a lot of these repetitions, and we're going to be combating some other problems if we have a person who's continually needing to use this drill. But for kids to learn to feel that sensation right off the get-go, that's one of the drills we do. Another drill that we'll incorporate that we won't necessarily demonstrate, but I'm going to ask you to visualize in helping to teach our pitchers to do what we call release and release, and that is release the ball, then release the backside, is just have Phil could actually utilize a partner to hold his back leg and then actually go through the pitching motion or actually try to throw a ball to a partner. I really like this drill. It was shown to me years ago when I was developing as a pitcher, and it really, really forces you to get out front, to stay aligned, to get your body headed in the right direction, to sustain balance, and what it forces you to do is to get that chest right over that lead knee. So if you can visualize, if Phil were standing here holding my back side and I were going to throw a ball, and I had to keep that back leg back, I would throw and I would have to totally collapse over that front knee. And that's something that we're going to try to accomplish through that type of drill. All you have to do is let the pitcher pitch, have a partner hold that back foot. There's no danger of them getting hurt. Hold on to them, and then allow that pitcher to go through the actual throwing process. The only thing that you're going to find out happens is the person that's throwing the ball is actually going to lose their balance right away, but they'll learn to control themselves and their balance while getting that chest over their front leg to establish some good habits of releasing the ball out front. The last drill I'd like to demonstrate for you today is we need a good landing support system for that front leg when it comes down to plant while we're delivering the ball to the plate. So the stride leg needs to provide support. And when you have a pitcher that's going through an entire day of pitching, that front leg is going to get tired. So what we want to do in this drill is Phil is going to follow through, and I'm going to grab his back leg. And then in this position, he can be bent over. He's going to do squats. So he's going to get in proper position like that, but he's going to do squats to work on strengthening that backside. So it's a great drill for that. Keep in mind, as the old saying goes, you can't shoot a cannon out of a canoe. In other words, that cannon of an arm can't be shot out of a unstable base. You need to have a good, strong, solid foundation for a pitcher to establish the strength and the endurance and the ability to deliver the ball like he wants to the plate. To conclude the drill work, I want to emphasize a couple of points. During these drills, we want to make sure that you understand that these drills can be done on flat ground, and that's what I actually emphasize for you to do. We did talk about utilizing a hand towel. We don't want a big, long, bulky towel, but we want a smaller half bath towel that'll serve the purpose well. Also, you can utilize plastic balls. You've got something shaped like a ball in your hand and you can deliver it accordingly. And it doesn't place much stress on the arm. When working on mechanics, we don't want people to get caught up on pitch control. That's why we don't put a ball in their hand. So emphasize that in doing these drills, this is what you want to accomplish. In the earlier portion of the complete pitcher segments, we talked about getting good quality work, throwing to targets during the flat work and ball work phase of our development. So keep that in mind. We do have a spot for persons to develop their pitching by having a ball in their hand, but in this case it's so effective utilizing these drills because you can do it even when the arm's sore or if you're in a rehab type of position. So don't utilize a ball. We don't recommend using a ball during these types of drills. This segment concludes the complete pitcher video set that I helped prepare for you. I hope that you find that these sets are very effective in you helping to develop your teams or as a young pitcher to develop yourself into becoming the complete pitcher you want to be effective at a very high level. We think that you utilizing the drills and the mental approach and the mentalities that we've incorporated into these drills will help help take you to the next level and help you become successful, not only for yourself, but for the team that's counting on you to get the job done while you're out there standing on what I call the hill, or the king of the hill that you want to be for the team. They want to be able to count on you, and you want to be able to come through for them. And I really think that the videos that you have here are going to help you develop into the kind of pitcher that you want to be. I want to thank you for taking the time to view these videos, and I wish you the greatest amount of success in your future endeavors. Thank you.